I've been listening to talk radio for years, and one thing I just can't stand is when the host has to, like, push his way on the people, beat the callers into his way of thinking, extending his ego, or when the callers call in and say something so outrageous and the host lets it go unchallenged. The sign you're on the road to truth is the lack of contradiction. You want to find truth, you just don't simply believe somebody because of their authority or their degree, or you listen to what they say, you test it against reality, and you hold their feet to the fire. Feet to the fire. I'm your host, James Adayanchik, the Black Knight of Talk Radio. We live in a wonderful technological society. We have, I tell you, you can plan things to its fullest, but until that moment in time, you will not know if things will work. And then when they do work, you are going to have to tap dance. Anyway, here we are. We made it in time. We're live. You're listening to IBC Radio Network, Feet to Fire. We got an interesting show tonight. We have a UFO-type deals, UFO, and we have Michael Horn for that, and we also have interdimensional beings on tap. We're going to talk with Danielle Sagan. He was here a while ago. We only had an hour, and it just seemed like it just wasn't enough. And he's going to come back, and we're going to do some more talking on that. And so I want to get right to work here. I want to mention that we do have a toll-free line now. However, due to said mentioned technical difficulties, it not going to be on for a little bit. We'll get it on as soon as we can, hopefully by the next guest who, he's been on already, so we're ready to ask him some questions. Michael Horn, we're going to give him some time anyway. So we're gonna get to that. And for future reference, you can get that number is 888-863-2722. Also, I want to mention that we have a P.O. Box number finally. We had people who were going to send us everything from UFO footage to pictures, listeners, pictures of themselves and so on like that. So that's cool. And that is F2F, Feet to Fire, anything like that. P.O. Box 487, Berwyn, Illinois, Berwyn, Illinois, 60402. That is the way that you can get to the show. Now, we have our first guest, who is the authorized American media representative for Billy Meier. That's Michael Horn. His material, his website is theyfly.com. It's a great site. I'm telling you, one of the things I was talking about, I don't know if I've had my head in the clouds or what have you, but one of my complaints has been real good pictures of UFOs and video and so forth and so on. Well, I came across the Billy Meier case, which I've heard of for years, but I never really got into it, you know. I've been just kind of listening about it, and I got into it. And lo and behold, when I look at the videos and so forth from it, it's just fabulous. And it's a great website to begin with. If you're by a computer while we're listening to the show today, I would suggest you go to it, davefly.com. And also, if you want to talk, if you're by a computer, we have our chat systems are open. And again, everything is right on the website. And we're in the official iVisit chat room now. I'm looking at it over to my right. We have Moni Moni, MX Hammer, Spanish Eyes. That's all I can see. Can't look all the way down there. So that's there. We'll take in your questions. Let me get right to business here and bring in Michael Horn. Michael Horn, you there?
I am here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you well. Can you hear me?
Absolutely.
Okay, we're ready to roll. I appreciate the abrupt phone call. I had a little technical issues here, but we worked it out. See how everything works out? Welcome to Feet to Fire, and we're kind of anxious and interested in hearing your story as well as the Meier story And it's really amazing, some of the pictures and photos that when I actually saw them, it's like, wow, that is good stuff.
Well, you know, it's really the best quality photo and film and video evidence of UFOs that's ever been presented. And for those of your listeners and yourself who may not be familiar thoroughly with the case, what's unique about it, apart from the clarity, the absolute clarity of the photographic and film evidence, is the fact that Meyer took those pictures between 1975 and 1979 prior to the existence of home computers, digital effects, Photoshop, or anything like that. So he was unable to hoax them, as a lot of people might, you know, want to think when they look at anything that clear. And on top of it, something that is a reoccurringly important factor, Meyer is a man who only has one arm. And even though he started to take photographs and tell his story publicly back in 1964, when he had two arms, his photographic evidence only got better after he lost his arm. So it's a very bizarre turn of events. And it's driven the skeptics crazy because they can't really debunk the case and they can't explain it.
And this case is unique, well, at least for me, and he's unique in a way where these visitors want to be understood. They're using Billy as a contact so they can get information out, as opposed to just happen to be seen or being abductors or what have you. This is wouldn't you call it a positive event?
Well, I would. I mean, even though there's a lot of content in the case that's to be very, blunt about it, it's quite ominous, but it is a positive event if we as human beings in our world can wake up to this and take a look at it and examine it. I've never said that people should simply accept that it's true. There's things in this case that I simply couldn't prove. Not yet. They haven't occurred. But I have proved that the case is true and real, that it is an authentic UFO contact case. The information in the case is even more stunning, if you can imagine that, than the physical evidence. So what you're looking at here is a civilization of humans who are far more advanced than we are, whose forefathers were involved in our own ancestors' times going way back, and who have admitted a certain self-obligated mission, if you will, to try, without directly interfering with us, without trying to, quote-unquote, save us from ourselves, to try to assist us, basically, to save ourselves, to assure our own future survival. Because the information in this case, which has been unerringly accurate, has shown that we are on a very, very bad course. And, of course, it doesn't take an extraterrestrial to either hold or oppose that point of view.
Now, there's some people listening who have no idea about Billy Meyer. I've started this show out years ago, and we started out generalizing just on issues, and we focused on more on the science, the paranormal, the spiritual, and so on. And a lot of those people have followed along the way, and they're going, well, who's Billy Meyer? Could you give a good 5-minute or something sum up of the case, and then we can get into some more specifics?
Absolutely. Well, let me try to, you know, take it kind of from the beginning, and I'll have to jump over some things because it's quite lengthy.
Yeah.
Meyer's contacts began when he was 5 years old. He was living in Bulach, Switzerland. And he and his father observed a silver object fly overhead while they were outside on their property. He, you know, grew up in a beautiful rural area with forests and farmlands and what have you. He asked his father what it was, and his father said that he didn't know. He thought it was probably a creation of Hitler's military for the purposes of, you know, some form of war machine. But he really didn't know. Meyer, shortly thereafter, was playing outside and went, you know, towards the woods that he lives near at that time, and he felt compelled to go into the woods. He felt drawn to move into the woods deeper and deeper, and there in a little clearing, there was a strange-looking pear-shaped craft, and in front of it, a very elderly-looking man who Meyer said was standing in what appeared to be like a deep-sea diver suit to him. It was, you know, what we would today probably call a space suit of some form or another, without a helmet on it, but with a metallic ring on the collar. But it looked to him like, otherwise, like a deep sea diving suit. This man was totally benign towards him. There was no feeling of fear. This wasn't an abduction, and he felt safe enough and secure enough to go forward and to approach the man. And that began a series of contacts that Meyer had with this man. This was his first contact person. And the contacts were either on board his ship, outside of the ship while it sat on the ground, or on board the ship above the earth. And the other form of contact were telepathic, whereby he would actually hear the man speaking to him in his mind. And as a young boy, he thought at times he was going crazy. These experiences were not easily shared with many people. This was 1942, conservative Switzerland. But there was a parish priest, a Father Zimmermann, who Meyer felt very safe with, and he confided in him. And the interesting thing was, Meyer learned later on, the priest had been prepared by the extraterrestrials to, they had had a contact with him to prepare him to be able to comfort and counsel Meyer as a young boy so that he wouldn't think he was going crazy and that this was a safe thing for him. Interestingly, I was just in Switzerland about 6 weeks ago, and I picked up a new book, unfortunately only in German, and my German's not that good that I can read it all yet, but it has a lot of the information about Father Zimmermann and many photos in there from those times, as well as some of the other times, so I'll kind of update it. Meyer's contacts with this elderly man, whose name was Svath, S-F-A-T-H, but that's the way it was given to him, continued for a few years, and when Meyer was already about 7 years of age, he was told by Svath that he, young Meyer, now had the thinking capacity of a 35-year-old man. And interestingly enough, I also picked up a tract of Meyer's writings from the time he was about 8 years old to maybe 12 or 14, and I've had some of them have been translated for me into English, and they are stunningly superior writings of basically of a very spiritual nature. And the core of this case, so we don't lose track of it, the core of this case I would call a spiritual case, and yet it is grounded in perfect logic, enormous amount of specific information, and the most phenomenal physical evidence you'll ever see. Meyer, when he was about 16, I think he went into the French Foreign Legion. In those interim years, he had a lot of trouble in school, he was beaten up, kids thought he was a weirdo, you know, all this kind of stuff, because he was having experiences he couldn't talk about. They were changing him inwardly, up, as you can imagine, to an enormous degree. And he was told also at a very early age a few things. Number one, that his life would be enormously difficult, and that this was something, these contacts with these people, were something that he had agreed to at a former time, and they explained to him laws pertaining to reincarnation and the truth of the spirit and things that, many things that he even as of today is not allowed to speak about, and many that he has spoken and or written about. In addition to all of this, he was told that when he was an older man, he would lose his left arm and that there was nothing that could be done about it. He would have to learn after a period of time to prepare himself for this and then to live with only one arm and do all of his work all of the evidence gathering, which is amazing, with one hand. So in the 1960s, Meyer found himself traveling through the Mideast, India, all these exotic places. He had been instructed by these Pleiaran people, sometimes called Pleiadians, to learn all about the terrestrial religions. He was instructed to meet as many of the various players on the planet that resided throughout the Mideast, some in Europe, India, and places like that. He met some interesting people, from King Hussein to Saddam Hussein, from Indira Gandhi to the Prince of Poland, and on and on. And there are photographs of him in one of these books from the 60s in various kind of garb, everything from kind of looks like Wild West American garb. He liked the Billy the Kid, which is where his nickname came from. And he was also photographed in desert garb, you know, strictly speaking, Arab garb, if you will. He was photographed with Jordanian fighters in the desert. Many photographs with him packing, you know, pistols and knives and what have you. He traveled around in some fairly rough areas. I should mention that in 1964 he was studying Buddhism at an ashram in Maroli, India, the Ashoka Ashram. And at that time he was taking black and white photos of up to 8 of the craft. And he had began already to have contacts with his second contact person, a woman named Asket. And interestingly enough, in 1998, a woman came forward, a grown woman came forward, who had been a little girl in the 60s. She was the granddaughter, or the niece, I forget which, of the man who was the head monk of this monastery, and he only recently died at the age of about 109 in California. Well, this woman's name is Pobal Chang, And she had been, as I mentioned, a young girl at the time in the 60s, and she came forward in 98 and made a presentation and said that not only had she and her grandfather seen these ships and the extraterrestrial woman that Meyer met with, but many people on the premises of the ashram had witnessed them, but being basically shy, they didn't interfere or, you know, try to, you know, intrude on it. And they saw Meyer, he had a pet monkey at the time, and they would see him, and then periodically he would be seen walking the grounds with this woman in her gold spacesuit with long blonde hair. And this woman would come into her room at night and occasionally sing her bedtime, you know, songs and stroke her hair and say goodnight to her. And this woman was not just some, you know, lunatic. She's a retired UN diplomat and obviously risked getting a bit of heat to her own reputation to come forward and attest to the veracity of Meyer's claims. People should know there's over 100 witnesses to the ships. There's 15 people who were direct witnesses at the home and center where Meyer lives, and other people live and come and, you know, kind of work. And these people had already passed lie detector tests by the late 70s as to the veracity of the case. So Meyer loses his arm, I think it's right around 67. He starts having contacts in 1975 with another woman named Semyaze, spelled with a J, S-E-M-J-A-S-E. And she is the contact person that is going to initiate the contacts that are to be transcribed and documented and published, along with all these great photo ops that she provided with her ships, as did some other members of her race from 75 on. And that began the, if you would call it, the more public phase of Meyer's contacts. And most of this is truly little known to people. The people that have heard about Meyer have just seen, well, some really interesting UFO photos. They're either too good to be true or, wow, they're really great. But most people know nothing about his enormously complex background. It's kind of like an Indiana Jones meets Close Encounters of the Third Kind. So you've got, you know, a case here that is still ongoing. His contacts, I know that his contacts are at least as recent as May 6th when I was over in Switzerland, and I did not witness it, but there was a contact and it was written about and some information was shared on it. And he may have also had a more recent contact as well. During these times, they are just, you know, trying to perhaps fine-tune whatever efforts can be made on our behalf and to help us to, you know, go ahead and disseminate the information for people's evaluation.
Well, you know what's really interesting on this is when I was listening to you, I wrote down first thing that popped up was that a lot of people have been persecuted and they've had problem childhood or what have you, and then they see the UFOs and it's explained away as being some type of psycho phenomena. And mm-hmm. Here's the other way around, where he experiences the UFOs later on after having he has the experience first,
right,
preparing him to see the stuff later on, so his trauma comes post.
Yes.
You know, it's kind of like they were almost grooming someone against the skeptics prior to, you know, from the beginning. It's almost like it's a planned event.
Well, you got it. You've hit it.
I mean, that's what they said it is, but, I mean, the evidence looks at it. And looking at some of these photos, for example, what looks real about to me is that usually the photos are blurry to cover up something, or you have a sharp object in a blurry background.
Right, right.
And these look very good. And I would assume that he was a photographer of some type, or at least a good amateur.
His photography experiences really were centered around taking pictures of their ships. He took them also with a camera that was damaged. This became very interesting and actually contributed to the authenticity of the photos when the research was done. His viewfinder, whatever it was stuck one notch short of infinity. And this actually enabled the people who analyzed the photos to get a very specific read on the objects in distance, in foreground, edge enhancement, a lot of things where people were trying to claim, well, these are just models. There's a 23-page photo analysis for free on my site where people can go and start to read about the analysis that was done on the photos. And we can get to it, but you should also know that I challenged the top international skeptics, and I have defeated them all. I don't mean to sound like I did it. They defeated themselves because They claimed they could duplicate his photos, and they failed. The Amazing Randy claimed the case was a hoax, and then he retracted it. Now he's telling lies about the sound recordings. I mean, these people are beside themselves, tripping all over themselves, because they cannot explain away the case.
Well, I tell you, I'm really excited to dig into this, because this looks like a solid case. And when you have something on firm ground, you don't mind joshing a little bit because it's on firm ground.
A lot of people take the shots.
No, well, I don't want to call them shots, but a lot of people don't like to have it shaken up because they like what they got here. But this is something we really can dig into. We're going to stop, though, for a break, and we'll be back in a little bit and continue with Michael Horn. I really, if you're by a website, you know, or when you do get by one, if you're listening and driving or whatever, obviously you've got to keep your hands on the wheel. But you really should check these photos out and read about it. And it's a nice site you got together there, and there's a lot there that you can dig into in a very short period of time. But we'll be right back after this short break on the IBC Radio Network.
Are listening to Feet to the Fire.
Você está escutando ao Feet to the Fire.
Du lytter til Feet to the Fire.
You are listening to Feet to the Fire.
With Black Knight.
All right, we're back. We're live. Feet to the Fire. Right back to Michael Horn. Michael.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'm looking at the pictures, and I'm just absolutely astounded at the detail. Now, I've actually seen a model years ago, what they made after the Billy Meyer pictures.
Right.
And actually, it's the first time I actually saw the picture, this particular one.
Ah.
And now, did they pose for these pictures? I'm assuming that this was all part of information. So they posed for him?
Absolutely. They told him that they were going to provide him with opportunities to take clear, you know, photographs and films and video, ultimately. They also warned him that people would still accuse him of faking and being a hoaxer, even though what you have in some of these photos, like that are on the website, there's a, if you look at that second photo on the top where there's a tripod and then you see the three ships beyond it, or if you look at any of these ships, photos with multiple ships, those are enormously difficult things to try to fake. You're talking, again, 1975, you're outdoors. And when the photographs were analyzed, they could tell that these were not little models that were within 15 feet of the camera. You know, on things like this where you've got them in the distance, they could tell that these were, you know, real, large objects reflecting the sunlight, and that clearly the man had not faked anything. Some of these photos in 1975, 1976, and the same thing goes for the film segments. But they also, with the film segments, would fly the ships in funny ways so that people, you know, would debate and argue. And it was done intentionally to create controversy. Because obviously, if these are real, these people could show up anywhere and just hover over, you know, the capitals of the world or sit down on the White House lawn. But that wasn't the agenda, because they also know that that would probably drive the greater portion of our population into a psychotic episode. So there's none of that is inflicted upon us. These things are, you know, made available. Meyer took the photos, and the controversy really began.
Well, speaking of this controversy, now I always figured if they, being ETs or what have you, wanted to let themselves known, you know, they could just fly around. There's no way they could not be known, especially nowadays. So
right.
I would imagine that this was part of a revelation plan to give some credence to what they were going to tell Billy Meyer. So my guess is that the words are much more important than the pictures, but they realize they have to give a little something to solidify what they're about to tell people.
Yes, well, in a sense, what they did was they gave the physical evidence first. And I should add that they also allowed him to record the sounds of the ship with 15 witnesses present. And those sounds can be found on my website as well. There's a little thing that says free downloads on my homepage. People click there and they scroll down. They'd be able to go right to these sounds and to listen to them. And they're quite amazing, especially since they were analyzed at least three sound laboratories by a half a dozen of the world's top sound experts. These people could not duplicate the sounds. They still are irreproducible even with synthesizers. And there were no known sources of these sounds in the record at the Groton Naval Undersea Laboratories in their sound banks. They had sounds of almost every object that made sound on the planet. And they could not identify the sounds of the ship. Then there were metal alloy samples given to Meyer by the ETs and turned over for analysis to a high-ranking scientist at IBM, Marcel Vogel. All of this is on, I encapsulated all this stuff on the DVD so people can just go through and look at this stuff and review it and see what they think. But Marcel Vogel held 32 patents at IBM. He was a genius. And he examined the metal samples, and he did that with a scanning electron microscope, and he videotaped the analysis. And basically, the conclusion was, I cannot make this with any resources available to me as a scientist at one of the top facilities in the world. This is technologically beyond what we do on Earth.
Now, why didn't the Men in Black end up show up on the scene and take away this metal, or did they? Is it still around?
Well, the metal samples were sequestered back in a safe at IBM. After the analysis the next morning, they were gone.
Okay.
There's been a lot of messing with Meyer's evidence. There were photos and films that were outright stolen. Some were photographs that Meyer had taken in space, phenomenal things that were stolen in processing. Some were altered to look like they had been hoaxed and then sent back to Meyer. This is part of the controversy of the case. It's an enormous thing. I mean, Meyer took hundreds, nearly 1,200 photos altogether over those period of maybe 4 years. And it's the most, you know, prolific production of photographic evidence ever, and the highest quality. And the fact that the world, it doesn't have its collective tongue hanging out at this point is, you know, it's almost beyond me. But there have been a lot of people working at not only disinforming on the case and attacking the man's character, but he has survived 19 documented physical assassination attempts. So this is not an easy pill to swallow for some of the points people out there that have, you know, other points to make and want to control things in a different way. But you said, you know, the physical evidence so that they'd be taken seriously. Well, the next step was in these documents, these contact reports, the transcripts of Meyer's conversations. In the context of conversation, they gave him a stunning amount of information, and I call it prophetically accurate because we can prove it was published prior to the official discovery or occurrence of the events or the facts, you know, contained therein. And this is something the skeptics can absolutely not deal with at all. They don't even address it. They try to dismiss it, but they can't. And that means that Meyer was forewarned of specifics that pertain to environmental damage, ozone A-bomb connections, bromine gases, earthquakes and the extraction of petroleum and natural gas from the earth, earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, wars, assassinations in advance of their occurring, astronomical discoveries pertaining to Venus, Saturn, and Jupiter before they were officially discovered. You can find most of this for free on my website.
Yeah, and I want to commend you on this, the amount of information that you have given people. No strings attached. Here it is. Download it, read it, view it. It's excellent.
Well, I appreciate that because, look, there's so much information in this case. There's still over 20,000 pages of information from Meyer that are only in German. We only have maybe at the most 3,000 pages in English, and people are working on translating the stuff, but basically it's up to any particular group that is interested to get the translations done. The Swiss are not going to do it for us. This isn't Hollywood for them. This is their lives, and it's a remarkable case for all these reasons and more. And really, my take on this whole prophetic thing, the prophetic information, like when you were saying, well, they gave the photographs so people would lend some credence, they then gave all this prophetic information, actually dating back to 1956, that's 48 years, and that information has been given, in my estimation, for one main purpose, many other purposes, but one main purpose, and that is that we will look at and examine the information contained in the prophecies for these times. That's where the rubber meets the road, so to speak.
And what I will you know, ask questions about what had happened, but probably toward the end of the show or a good portion of it, I want to look forward to these prophecies.
Sure, anything you want.
And I have questions coming in. I'm going to pop them out as they come in.
Great.
One thing I'd like to talk. You mentioned when you say whenever you say the word Pleiadians, we get visions of the Zeta and Nancy Leader and so forth. Has there been any relationship in revelations to Billy Meyer about other people currently having revelations from other ETs?
Let me give it to you this way.
Okay.
In the very beginning, when Meyer was meeting as a young boy with these people, he was told that they would refer from that time on until a specific time to themselves as Pleiadians. And that specific time came February 3rd, 1995. At that point, Meyer was allowed, when these people were officially taking, you know, leave of the planet from their bases here, he was told that he could then reveal that there are no Pleiadians. And the reason for that is the Pleiades star system that we see from Earth, number one, is not where they come from. Number two, it's too young and inhospitable to be a home to any other life forms. Where they live, in the direction of the Pleiades, they live in what's called an altered time-space configuration from Earth, a difference of about a fraction of a second. Believe me, I don't understand all this hyperspace travel stuff, and there's physicists who have been quite attracted to the case and who are better able to understand some of these things on a theoretical level than I am. But suffice it to say, to get to the point, back to the point, these people call themselves Pleiaren. There are no Pleiadians, and the reason they did that, they said, and they told him when he was a young boy, once you come public later in your life with your contacts with us, and you start to publish the information, there are many people that are going to come forward that will claim that they are in contact with us, that they are having contacts with Pleiadians, that they know the same people, that they get messages and all this stuff. And they said to him, this will not be true because our contacts will solely be with you. For, you know, our contacts, as far as this race is concerned, are solely with you. And they explained the reasons, and he knew them. And they said, so you have to be prepared for people lying and claiming to be contactees. Yes, to answer the second part of your question, there are other races, and back in 75, they told him about the Zeta Reticulum beings who had abducted Betty and Barney Hill. What they said about those beings was, for the most part, these were simply rather benevolent, scientifically oriented human race who was quite interested in, probing and finding out all they could about us, our world, etc., and they would block out the memories of people so that they wouldn't be remembering trauma and what have you. Of course, we know that that didn't last long, and it was probably intentional that somehow these things would be cracked as well. As for actual other races, Meyer has met a number of other races, primarily human. There are some that he's described as being a little different. There are currently some other races not landing anywhere, but certainly flying around, occasionally being seen, although what is seen in the skies over America is for the most part not extraterrestrial craft. We'll get into that a little later.
Oh, good.
He did say that the abductions, though there have certainly been abductions, and though there certainly are some hostile races, the majority of it is mass psychosis. The majority.
Oh, okay. That's very interesting. That's very interesting. Because what I'd like to do, if I could, is the show is rather than talk about the specific history of the case, and we can, everything's important, because you have such a great thing on your website, I'd like to take the opportunity of having you here live to ask you about more theoretical backup things,
yeah,
and so forth, if that's okay.
Anything you want.
Okay, good. Well, we're going to take a break right now.
And your listeners, too.
Yeah, and we're gonna try and get the actual phone open, if I can. But we do have to chat and email to try, and I apologize about the phone stuff. I got the 1-800 number in, and of course I'm going to have trouble. Anyway, we'll take a break, and we'll be right back. We're talking with Michael Horn, the website, theyfly.com, about the Billy Meyer contact story. Very interesting.
You're listening to The Black Knight
on the IBC Radio Network. All right, we're back live on Pizza Fire. Michael Horn, we were talking about the Billy Meyer case, and I wanted to try and get in some questions, and we have some coming in the chat line. And I allegedly I've gotten to one toll-free number. It's 888-863-2722. 888-863-2722. I'm dyslexic as well. Anyway, welcome back, Michael Horn.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
On this subject, you mentioned the spirituality. We have a bunch of questions coming in on things like, do they believe in God? Is there a God that created all things? How different is he? And, you know, various, like, summing up into one question. You know, is there a God, creator God, and so forth, and what you can add about that?
This is a hugely important aspect of the case. This question was asked by Meyer of them, and they said, we don't use that term because we know what it means. And they said, okay, what does that mean? And they said, God is the term that refers to, in every case, or let's say 99% of the cases, the extraterrestrial humans who were here on Earth eons ago representing themselves as the creators of the universe. And you can find this in the Judeo-Christian Bibles and tradition, in the ancient Indian traditions, East Indian, such as in the Bhagavad Gita and all this. The gods, including Greek and Roman and all this, these were, in the cases in which there was myth, the myth was modeled on these humans who were here, who were very powerful, obviously technologically enormously advanced, and spiritually knowledgeable in many cases, although not always, and even the ones that were spiritually quite knowledgeable, they did not always comport themselves in that kind of a way. If you take the trouble to look and read the first few books of the Old Testament, and if you can do that objectively, if you have, let's say, no religious background, or if you're willing to read it without either accepting or rejecting the premise, you could see that the God of the Old Testament was a being that was enormously bloodthirsty and commanded the deaths of literally millions of people, the majority of whom were innocent non-combatants. And if you also read these first few books of the Old Testament, you'll see that these murders and terrorism and infanticide was ordered to be done without mercy. I don't want to get too much into theology or argue with people's religious point of view, but since the question came up, the other part of the answer is, so, there's no creator God. There is that which they refer to as the creation. Of course, this begs many questions, but let me give you my, kind of kindergarten understanding of it. The universe in which we live, which is only one of countless billions of already existing universes, and this has got to be emphasized in this case, and that's makes for an enormous matter to contemplate. But this universe in which we live, they say this is a creation. That is what the universe is. And it is a self-created, if you will, creation that is the source of all that exists within this creation, within this universe. And the material aspect of this universe, the physical life aspect, the planets and stars and human life forms and other ones, only exist within a relatively small area of the universe. When you get into this, it's truly mind-boggling what their cosmology is about. And again, I have to simply say it's speculative, as is anything to do with religion or spirituality, until it becomes somehow a truly experienced and provable reality. But just with that caveat, just take this, with a grain of salt as an answer. What they said is this: this creation that we're in, it gives of itself a small piece, a hologram of itself to every human. That is the human spirit, and it is unique to human life, which is abundant throughout the universe. The purpose of human life, in the simplest sense, is the evolution over countless millions of incarnations for spiritual growth and knowledge to higher and higher levels of existence, ultimately to re-merge back with the creation.
Well, that's interesting. And we're going to go to a break now, as you hear, but
sure.
I just have a hard time grasping of a self-created creation. It's not that I'm biased to any particular religion or God. It's just that I just can't buy that all of this stuff, the billions of worlds, spontaneously erupted. But we'll ponder that when we come back from this break.
Sure.
Feet to the Fire, IBC Radio Network. Hi, this is James Athayanchik, the Black Knight of Talk Radio. And you've heard us talk about iVisit. There's a couple things I wanted to specify. iVisit has a new version out, version 3.0, and it's set up to share and view web pages, photos, video clips, music files, PowerPoint presentations, and other media types when connected to others on iVisit. Plus, the video is 4 times bigger for a much more personal experience. Improved audio quality with smoother delivery and easier setup. You can have your own public or private room, which enables you to host private or public meetings. You can list your room in the iVisit public directory to meet people from all over the world. To pick up your iVisit Lite or experience the added value of Plus, go to www.iVisit.com. It's for both PC and Macintosh for cross-platform integration. iVisit, the last chapter in telecommunication.
The opinions expressed on Feet to the Fire are those of the host, the callers, the guests, and any of the writers of chat, email, or instant messages, and are not necessarily those of any of the broadcast affiliates. Subject matters may be too intense at times for more sensitive listeners, dealing with controversial issues with blunt, brutal honesty. With that said, at no time will abusive language, pornographic descriptions, racial, ethnic, religious slurs, or simple bad manners be tolerated. Stay tuned to Feet to the Fire.
Feet to the Fire. I'm your host, James Audet Janchik, the Black Knight of Talk Radio. We have Michael Horn here. One moment. We do have the phone line open, 888-863-2722. Also email at f2f@intersites.com. We have the IBC official chat room. If you go to our website, which is at feet2fire.com, you'll see a button which says chat room. You'll also see a button that says how to contact, participate in the show. You'll see the phone numbers. You'll see the chat systems. We got it all set up. We're an iVisit with the cam right in the studio. If you want to chat and watch, I tell you, we got it all. We just need you. And we're back with Michael Horn. You are
here.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I panicked for a minute. Now, we got floods of questions coming in. Our chat room is very active. We've got a bunch of people in there who come up with some pretty good questions. You were talking about God and so forth. And one thing I wanted to preface here is that I like to talk about any subject. We could talk about anything from God to politics, whatever, except the political arena. I mean, like, we're going to get into some things as far as prophecy goes with current political scenes. But I don't get into, like, who's better, Democrat, Republican, that kind of thing. But if I'm correct on this, when you talked about an alien, regardless if they're good or bad, if they've been around 1 billion years or 2 billion years, we're still talking about a finite being.
Right.
Now, would you agree it's possible? Because I have kind of a working theory, a working model, very minor, and I would take input from people like you who have at least a connection with someone who's talked to ETs. Perhaps in all their technical and historical knowledge, that their spiritual advancement may not, in other words, the God, if I can call it, even though it has, aliens have come here and been called gods, Roman gods, whatever, that perhaps God is still need to be discovered by extraterrestrials somewhere.
Well, as you said before the break, you said, well, you can't quite, fathom that it should be a self-created universe.
Yeah.
Of course, if when people start to discuss these areas and contemplate it, if they really don't get paralyzed at some point by the lack of ability of the human mind to figure it out, then there's something wrong. The reality is, if one accepts the idea of a creator God, then one has to still ask, well, where did that God come from? Who or what created it? And so the religious answer is always, well, it created itself. God created itself, and that's the end of it, and he created the universe. Well, where was he sitting when he did that? It's one of those things where the
truly, the more you, and we're supposed to struggle with all this, but if what these Pléiaron have said is accurate, and let me just introduce the idea that they've provided an enormous amount of historical information on the gods of the Old Testament and the New Testament and the man that we know as Jesus and different figures throughout history from their perspective. And there's actually a book that's out now. Meyer is a co-discoverer in 1963 of documents that he and another man, who was a very religious man on top of it, found in an abandoned tomb outside of Jerusalem. Put the pictures together here, and the document was found to be over 2,000 years old, and these were scrolls that were written in Aramaic. They were partially transcribed by this man before he ended up being assassinated himself, this Mr. Rashid, and the translated transcripts, a part of it, were forwarded to Meyer by 1970. They had been translated into German. Meyer published them. They've since been translated into English. They are called the Talmud of Emmanuel. You'll find links to some websites from my website where these things are discussed, and you can learn more about it. When you scratch the Meyer case, you have to understand that you are pulling a thread on the very fabric of everything we know and don't know about reality. Is it all true? I don't know. Everything I've been able to check and to find, did this occur? Did it not? If it occurred, when did it occur? Who was the first to know about it? That comes up Meyer all the time. But as for this information on the creation, they say that the original universe, they call it the absolute absolutum, the first creation, is so ancient we couldn't put years to it. We don't know. We're not living in anything even close to the original Big Bang. Our universe is a new universe. And yet it is at this stage already 47 trillion years old, and according to them, will live, that is, will expand and exist before it compresses again, for a total of 311 trillion years. And if you start going back to our question here about God or creation or whatever, when you take their information and when you actually read some of their, I think we put up one of the documents of a kind of spiritual tract that of information given by one of the ETs to Meyer. It is so, in my estimation, so far more logical as well as inspirational than anything I've ever read, that there's a resonance, there's something that rings true. And yet I can't prove it, you know, any more than anybody can prove at all that any of the religions are true. The problem with religions for me is you have all of these different major religions, to say nothing of the hundreds or thousands of sub-religions that claim that they are the, you know, they contain the truth, and they all contain rituals and superstitions and all sorts of stuff, which are absolutely missing, absent from what are called the teachings of creation and the laws of creation, which are based on logic and spiritual wisdom and truth and love and some nice ideas there. But truly, we can only scratch the surface right now. And even if we were to study this for the next 50 years, we're scratching the surface, because spiritual truth, whatever it may be, is going to be a very, very all-encompassing subject for all of our lifetimes.
Well, I'm planning right now on July 4th to have a show where I'm going to be my own guest. And I have a theory that answers all those things. I don't want to waste your time at this point now, though you're more than welcome to join in on the fun then. But
thank you.
How about are the Anunnaki mentioned and Nibiru and all that stuff? You must have heard about the Nibiru's return allegedly every 3,000 years and so on. Can you talk about that? Address that. We're getting questions on that.
Yeah, I'll do a little with that because there is some other stuff here that we want to.
Okay, that's sure. You know, sure. Jump in. I'm just throwing out the question.
Yeah. No. I want to try to touch on that because Meyer had spoken about Nibiru, or it's also, there's another pronunciation to it apparently as well, and it has to do with a planetary body, I believe, that comes around every 3,500 years or something like this. It is not inhabited. It is not the source of extraterrestrial life. There apparently are, and I'm a bit familiar with Sitchin as well. I know a man who's his webmaster who's also involved in this case. There are confusions about Nibiru and what it was and its relevance to Earth. It certainly played a part in the, you know, time of the ancient Sumerians, but we also have to realize that the Sumerians and that whole epoch there is preceded and predated by other information in this case going back, if not hundreds of thousands of years, millions of years, which gives yet a whole other perspective to struggle with, if you will. I think I've posted an article where Meyer speaks about that. That's also freely available for those that want his take or whatever the information he's, you know, published on Nibiru. Go check that out at theyfly.com, and feel free, you can email me about if you have questions or anything. And you know, you can see there's a DVD and there's a book and all that, but there's a ton of stuff that's free for you to get familiar with this. And let me say simply, because I know our, you know, our time will be limited, the prophecies that pertain to these times are enormously important to familiarize oneself with, as dire as they may be. And let me just state this. In 1995, Meyer, when the Pleiaren were preparing to leave Earth, there was a contact, the 251st contact, February 3rd of 95, and Meyer presented a document to them that was very lengthy, that particular contact document, in which he had put forth a lot of information. There were six things that were contained as predictions in that. And one was the U.S. attack on Iraq. The next one was the increase in Islamic fundamentalist terrorism and attacks that would follow. And then he had things in there like the spread of mad cow disease to other animals and humans, the appearance of a new disease like SARS, the renewed concerns about chemical warfare and weapons, and the danger of an accident at the nuclear power plant near Lyon, France, one of 436. He mentioned that specific one. This I first downloaded from the Internet in 1998. It was all published in 2001 in the book And Yet They Fly. And so it was all published in a book that is in many people's hands right now prior to the occurrence of all those things, and especially, of course, the U.S. attack on Iraq, and that all the events that followed. The nuclear power plant near accident occurred on August 12th of last year, and it made the news, and they shut it down there in Lyon, France, before there was an accident. That's, again, to establish the credibility. And so the prophecies for these times that specifically warn of damage and danger coming not only, you know, if you will, to the entire planet, but specifically to the U.S. In 87, they forewarned Meyer of the destruction of the World Trade Center and that which would follow it.
Well, why don't we take that time now, if we can, to go into what do we got to look forward to?
Okay, well, we have a choice, that is humanity. We can look forward to a difficult but bearable transition into what we might want to call the New Age, or we can look forward to what they are saying, and I will give you a paragraph that I will simply read from the Enoch prophecies. And they are in the new book that is on the website. And this is not to scare people. It is a prophecy is something that can be changed if people act in time. A prediction is set in stone. These are prophecies, and it goes like this. And I'm just reading it randomly from the middle part, but I mentioned the World Trade Center. Far in the West, we've just spoken here early in these prophecies, they talk about things coming to Europe and military stuff and the overthrow of France by Islam and all that. Here they say, far in the West it will be different. The United States of America will be a country of total destruction. The cause for this will be manifold. With her global conflicts, which are continuously instigated by her and which will continue far into the future, America is creating enormous hatred against her worldwide in many countries. As a result, America will experience enormous catastrophes which will reach proportions barely imaginable to people of Earth. The destruction by terrorists of the World Trade Center, the WTC, they spell it out, by terrorists will only be the beginning. Yet all the apocalyptic events will not only be brought about, and they go on to explain this. This is still alterable. But they have said, not only, you know, I'm focusing on the U.S. They've said this about other countries, including England, Germany, obviously Iraq, Israel, and Palestine. These people that are in positions of leadership have to be removed if we want to survive. It's just that simple. And they've specifically said, as they hint here, if America does not change its policies, its military policies, the level of destruction that comes here is unprecedented. It's something we don't want to think about, we could barely conceive of. All I can tell you, 25
destruction
years,
by how? I mean,
They've spelled out, okay, I'll tell you some of it.
Okay.
Due to use of unbelievably deadly and destructive weapons, such as chemical, laser, and others, and by cloned murder machines. But in addition to this, the Earth and nature, maltreated to the deepest depths by the irresponsible human beings of Earth, will rise up and cause destruction and bring death unto the Earth. Enormous firestorms and gigantic hurricanes will sweep over the USA and bring devastation, destruction, and annihilation, as this, from time immemorial, never before will have happened. Not only America, but also all other Western industrial countries, which still live at the beginning of the new millennium, will, in the delusion that they could dominate and rule over underdeveloped nations, i.e. third world countries, will not only soon lose their influence over these, but must defend themselves against them. It goes on and on. The military machinations that affect and involve Russia, Germany, France, Spain, England, the Middle East, Scandinavia, the U.S., these prophecies are actually ancient and were foretold by a prophet named Enoch some 10,000 years ago. You know, you don't, this isn't to scare people, it's hopefully to wake them up, because my job, I would like to prove this wrong. I would personally like to contribute to proving these prophecies wrong, and I will do everything I can. The first step is people have to wake up and know about this case and the material in it. I said that there's prophetically accurate information going back 48 years, impeccable. Scientific discoveries, information about planets, and I've had astronomers who've been stumped who've had to say, yeah, he's right. How did he publish that before we knew it? So if it comes down to they're trying to tell us, look, you people in all of these countries, you don't know what your leaders are doing. You've turned over your responsibility to people who ill represent you, who are in it for power, for greed, for money. This has nothing to do with whether the Democrats or Republicans are better or worse. The political process itself is a sham that is based on advantage, not on service to humanity. And as long as you do not have truly spiritually oriented people who are willing to serve humanity in those roles for the betterment of humankind, not for their own advantage, you will encounter ever-worsening situations. And they described as far back as 1980, 81, 87, these things, the terrorism. There's a whole article that I'll be posting on my website that has to do with the contributions of Ronald Reagan to the mess we have right now, that they gave the information to Meyer in 1980, just prior to Reagan's taking office, and they included information on the assassination attempt against him, his dealings with Iran, the arming of despots and dictators, and it's all turned out to be accurate. So we're looking at something here that either people are going to go, eh, got to get away from this, it can't be right, or people are going to start to look at this information and say, wait a minute, is this true or not? It's either the biggest, most impenetrable hoax pulled off by a one-armed man over a period of some 48 years since he was first given this type of information, or it's the most important story in all of human history. It affects us now. It's trying to alert us to what's coming our way if we do not wake up and act. And what they've described for this country, let alone for the rest of the world, the loss of two-thirds of the world's population, the uninhabitability of the northern hemisphere due to enormous radioactivity and biological contamination, the weather changes that will bring snow and volcanic eruptions and destruction all the way down through the equator. Nobody escapes this if we don't change it.
I would agree with what you're saying. One thing I would say about it is that the World Trade Center, I don't know when that was actually predicted.
87.
Is it it's after the first one?
I think it's before the first one.
Before the first one.
One in 90 or 91?
Yeah, right, okay. The thing that you're saying, which I find interesting, is all these prophecies. I've done a lot of my personal studying in apocalyptic literature, and this all jives with that. Now, in one way, that's good, because it all jives with other stuff. It's not brand new revelation coming off from a complete obtuse angle.
Right, although there's plenty here that you probably haven't seen, but you go ahead with your point.
Yeah, but also my point is that it may be terrible, but it's not. I'm going to have to perhaps, you know, get in more detail about the difference. It's not that hard to predict that type of stuff in the generalities. I like to hear things like the World Trade Center, because that's a specific.
Well, they've got a lot of specifics in here. And there are things where people will say, well, what are the dates? You know, and they're good. And what they've done is they said, we are not giving the dates for certain things because human beings, not understanding how the laws of cause and effect work, would understandably try to interfere with an event.
Well, yeah.
Rather,
well, how do they know these dates, though? I mean, being, you know.
Three means.
Okay.
Three means. They have computer abilities. They are 8,000 years ahead of us technologically. Imagine we've had, in the past 100 years, technological advance. Multiply that by a factor of, what, 80?
Right.
They have time as well as space travel capabilities, and some of their people are enormously developed in terms of their own psychic or clairvoyant abilities, such as our ancient prophets like Enoch were.
Okay, all right.
So, again, I don't shove this down anybody's throat right. because it's very possible that something's erroneous here. But, hey...
No, you know, I wouldn't want to use strong words like erroneous. What I look at, and I listen very good. I want to listen to prophecy because, like you said, prophecy is a warning. It's not in stone.
That's correct.
And when someone tells me the future in stone, I don't believe that. I mean, I think that would be an act of God by definition would be the only person or thing or whatever you want to call it who
yeah.
would know absolute. So I'm definitely interested. On these subjects, and the fact that it correlates just further, to me, it just further shows that these things have to change, but I just don't see it happening, quite frankly.
Well, because so far, those of us who care about this in this way, I don't mean necessarily just extraterrestrially, but who realize that life is cause and effect, that things don't just happen, we have, not only in our country, but to a large degree here, turned over our responsibility to others. We've gotten dopey and watched too much TV, maybe instead of watching trees and contemplating nature.
That's true. No, you're right. And boy, our time has flown. I tell you, I'd like to be able to invite you back and perhaps just continue on where we left off and go into the prophecy part, if that would be okay.
Absolutely.
And,
sure.
And we will put up, we do have links on the site. We're going to have the show for rebroadcast. We'll have links to theyfly.com.
Great.
And I want to thank you for your time, and yeah, of course, there's never enough, especially when you get something this good.
We'll do more.
Yeah, well, definitely. I appreciate the time. And that's Michael Horn and theyfly.com. Thank you very much for coming.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
All right, so we'll be back with Daniel Sagan, who talked to interdimensional beings. So we're going to find out more, probably not good news, in a moment.
You are listening to Feet to the Fire.
Você está escutando ao Feet to the Fire.
Bienvenue. Vous écoutez Feet to the Fire.
You are listening to Feet to the Fire.
With Black Knight.
All right, we're back. We're live. Feet to the Fire on the IBC Radio Network. I'm your host, James Adayanchik. Black Knight of Talk Radio. All right, well, hey, we are live. We got Daniel Sagan coming up in a minute. I want to remind you, we have a toll-free number in the United States and Canada if you want to call in and be on the air. 888-863-2722. Also, we have a website at Feet to Fire. That's a digit 2, the number 2 in there, feettofire.com. There's ways that you can chat with us live. We have a chat room. The official IBC chat room is flying. All kinds of people in there talking and give good questions here, too. I appreciate it. It's like having a right-hand go-to, you know, right here. We have the personal chat you can do from there as well. Email f2f@intersights.com. We have the video system that you can come on the web at www.ivisit.com. You can, I don't know, peer into the studio and see me in action, whatever you want there. But we have that. Let's bring our guest on here. Daniel Sagan was on the show before. He had contact, as the way he puts it, with multidimensional beings. And we got into talking about that, and it was not enough time. And lo and behold, here he is back live to help us some more information. Welcome, Daniel.
Hi, James. It's good to be back on the show. What kind of questions do you have?
Well, I've got some questions coming from the chat room, and I have a few myself. We were talking about these beings. I want to mention that for people who want to know how Daniel first encountered, we do have the archive of the show, and I would recommend listening to it rather than go over it again, and this way we can get right down to business. But these creatures that you've talked to, beings, people, multidimensional beings, if I remember from our first discussion, they're not ETs, but they're some type of a being that is in a different dimension, but they're not like the grays that we normally hear of, correct?
Yes and no. And I'll say that because ET is basically a generalized term. It doesn't identify a particular species. The multidimensional creatures or beings that I talk to, they are the beings that can actually manipulate reality very easily, but so do the grays can. But these beings in particular that I made contact, they are not so much interested in the locomotion we have on Earth. They are basically checking things out now and then. And if some people are open to communication, then they'll even make contact with that person. I myself experienced contact with these beings actually through an out-of-body experience, which kind of was bizarre because it was like all these people were talking to me in this out-of-body experience, but then I noticed that some of them intentionally tried to make contact with me, which is very unusual. And as time progressed, that's when I realized that actually these intentional contacts were not, so to speak, accidents that some people felt like asking me strange questions, but these were actually intentional contacts. I think the first contact that you have with these beings has to be a polite and cautious one. As you probably know, we have about 6 billion model codes on Earth. There's so much confusion on this planet about who is right and who is wrong. You don't want to, so to speak, reveal that you are an angry person. You don't want to reveal that you are a hostile person. The best thing to do is to, in a way, let's put it this way, not think up anything because they can scan your mind. In other words, don't think like, well, he looks like this animal or something like that. So the best thing to do is to approach them in a very polite and cautious way. Anything you do and say, they already know. And as we know, the last contact the Aztecs and Mayas and Incas had with the Spanish and Portuguese conquistadors, that didn't turn out too well.
Oh, really? They I'm not aware of that.
Well, you know, the Spanish conquistadors basically butchered so many Indians in South America.
Right.
So the contact that you make has to be a cautious one.
Oh, I see. You're using an analogy. Okay, I got you. I'm sorry.
Yes, I'm using that as an analogy.
Okay.
One of the interesting things, and I know that people like to talk about the grays. Well, first of all, I would like to remind people they are not grays. They are, so to speak, light green color. Another thing, peculiarity about these creatures is that they are very impatient. And I don't mean that in a rude way. Actually, it took me a while to figure out why they don't like communicating with people in a way. And it's because they use telepathy. Now, it might take me 4 or 5 hours to explain one concept to these people. It's like they transmit a zip file from mind to mind, and everything is processed in a split second.
That sounds like it might hurt you. I mean, is there a risk of damage?
Actually, not hurt. No, the best thing, from personal experience, it's to tell yourself that imagination is the infinite universe, and that you don't fear information. Information overload can actually create nervous breakdown. But when these beings communicate with you, all of them that I made contact, they do it in a telepathic mode. It took me a while to start thinking about what I was about to say, because before then I used to move my lips. Just like speaking anyway. But some of them are kind of impatient, especially the Zebras, who kind of do the what I'll call is the dirty work, because they're involved in doing genetical experiments and stuff like that. But they get impatient with humans because humans, it takes them a long time to say something, and they get bored. And then they say, well, we spend maybe a few days here, and all we had to listen to is the drama of one person. Well, we can see that from space. We can listen from satellites. We don't even have to land on Earth anyway. But with these beings, as I was saying, you have to be polite and don't make any sudden moves towards them because you don't know how they will interpret those moves.
Now, isn't this, this is during for lack of a better term, an astral travel, right? This is a spiritual out-of-body experience you're talking to them?
Well, that's how contact was first initiated, through an out-of-body experience.
Okay, but then you're now talking about actually meeting them in the physical sense.
I haven't met them in a physical sense, but I normally do them at night.
Okay, well, my point was that how would you attack them if you're in a spiritual body? Can you actually physically? I've always heard that when you're traveling, you can't do any actual physical harm to somebody.
Okay, we're going into the out-of-body experience here. All right, well, if you have an OBE and somebody, let's say, slaps you on the face, you on the actual body might not feel it because you already know that you're outside the body. But the physical itself gets an impression of the slap.
Okay,
because
all
the astral self is connected to the physical counterpart through a cord, as some people might call the astral cord. So whatever happens in the astral self actually gets automatically transmitted to the physical one.
Oh, okay. Well, that's very interesting.
I had some nasty experiences with some beings, but I didn't know what I was doing anyway. And it was like I woke up from an out-of-body experiences with bruises on my hands and stuff like that. And I knew that physically I didn't go out and started a fight or anything like that, but something happened during the experience.
Oh, that's very interesting.
One of the things that I've been doing, well, for the past few years is actually a lot of experiments in regard to remote viewing and remote influencing. It's kind of hard to explain how you make contact with these beings because there is no terminology for it. There is no science dedicated to examining different methods of communication, both astrally or physically, anything like that. Hardly anybody is talking about this. The best way to describe a contact with a being from another reality through an out-of-body experience is to say there is a mixture of out-of-body experience with remote influencing.
Okay.
I don't know if that makes sense.
No, that's a very, very, very good way in my mind. You know, it's a very good descriptive way to say that there's a blend between the two. It's not inherently safe, as you might think, that you could have an influence that would be brought back or transmitted with you into physical reality from a spiritual reality.
That's true, yes. Well, I could actually give an example of one of those. So, as I would call it, negative experiences, because sometimes when I do experiments with remote viewing, I try to go in places where I would like to go. I don't care about people getting killed and stuff like that. I don't like to be in shock.
Right.
So I try to go into places that I don't know what's there, or maybe I would like to investigate myself if I could, or if I could afford to pay for the airfare or something like that. And in one of those experiences, basically, the Zeras were doing, so to speak, genetical experimentation on this woman, and out of the blue, they realized that there was a presence in the room, and they all kind of looked in one direction, and I knew that the direction they were looking, they were towards me. And I kind of freaked out and basically started going back to Earth, so to speak, because all this was actually between Earth and the moon, you could say, in just like satellites in outer space kind of thing. And one of them grabbed me by the hand, and he looked at me and said, "What are you doing here?" But he didn't say by moving lips. He just telepathically said that.
Right.
And because I was kind of freaking out, I said, "Let me go." And then he just let me go. And when I came back into the body, I had some bruises on my hands. And as I was looking at them, I thought, "Oh my God." that was a close encounter. I'll call it a negative experience because the Zeras don't like to be surprised. They like to know things in advance.
They're probably not used to having surprise. And
well, not from humans.
Right, and that's kind of getting to my crux of what I've been working on over a few years, is that I think that a lot of these higher, we'll call them more ancient beings,
yes,
are actually curious and or, if I can use the word afraid very lightly, of humans, because there's something in us that's just not in other species, and it's curious, but it could also be discerning depending upon where we go, and we're blowing each other up. What if we go into multi-dimensions blowing things up, you know?
Yes, that's the worst thing that could happen.
So let's hold it there. We're going to go to a break, and I want to come back, and we'll continue with that. We have Daniel Segan on. His website is astraltraveler.com. And we'll be right back after a message on the IBC Radio Network.
You're listening to
The Black Knight.
On the IBC Radio Network. And we're back live with Daniel Segan, who is talking to us about multi-dimensional communications. My tongue twister, I should go into talk radio. Anyway, welcome back, Daniel.
Hi, James.
Go ahead.
What I was about to say is, I remember the last time when I was talking, somebody asked me about shadow people. I didn't get a chance to go more deeply into that, because one of the common mistakes people do with shadow people is they think they're all, so to speak, ETs. In most cases, the experiences people have is actually their own personal fears. But there is a group called, that most people refer to as Men in Black. But these people, they are not aliens. I mean, some people think they are aliens, but actually they are very human. And I wanted to mention this because the Men in Black, they are real, and they are human, and they definitely have abilities that most of us are unaware of. And they use those abilities to manipulate certain things. I mean, they can easily do remote influencing and give you a negative impression from distance. And I mean, the Men in Black are kind of controlling information, but they're not in control, as some people might think, and they're not aliens, as others might think. So anyway, let's go back to the program.
Well, now you got me going a little, and the Men in Black, the Men in Black, as I know it, are belong to our government or governments behind the government, and I got a feeling that's not who you're talking about.
It's not to do with government. Actually, there is a consortium on Earth. Now we go into the Pandora's box of the Illuminati mind.
Well, you know, hey, we're on a journey here.
Illuminati in Latin means enlightened people. And we have to keep in mind that this enlightened people is just a general term, you know. They all have different sects, Knights of Templar, Skulls, and other types of Masonic. They all have different names. The most powerful one is actually the main sect, which I personally believe, because they have manipulated a lot of events. When I make contact with these multidimensional beings, I mean, I ask them for how long they've been coming here and if they intervene in certain events in human history. And they say that they've been coming here for, well, according to them, a short time. To us might be a million years, but to them it's just maybe a few days. And they definitely intervene in certain events, but not... not in a negative way. I mean, the gods that we have in the Bible, well, in the Old Testament, you know, which like spy mate, and he doesn't know what's happening on earth, and he sends his angels to check things out. The type of God is actually a humanized God. Most of the ancients, when they made contact with ETs or other beings, they humanized those beings, and then when they left, because they left, I mean, no ET has intention in becoming a babysitter to a human. When those beings left, basically those indigenous people became what are referred to as cargo cults. and that is they try to imitate the technology of the gods or the humanized gods, not knowing what that technology was. So they build all these intricate temples that maybe look like spaceships or maybe look like, a ballroom or something, or a space station or something like that. But they were not aware of what they were doing back then. With these multidimensional beings, information is very valuable. And what you said before the break, that in a way they might be afraid of humans, actually that is true. They are afraid of making any sudden moves because they don't know what is going to make humans scream. Since we're not used to seeing people from other worlds, the first reaction we get is fear.
Let's hold on right there, because we're going to have to go to a break at top of the hour for news and information, and we'll come back in there. And I do want to get into this so-called, like a spiritual aspect of it. And, all right, we'll hold it there. We're here with Daniel Segan talking about multidimensional beings traveling, and you. We'll be right back. I bet you can't do that in, like, Swahili.
I think I can.
You've been listening to the Black Knight and Squire G radio show. Any characterizations, dialogue, or quotations that remotely resemble either reality or humor are purely coincidental.
I forgot about that. I forgot about the clicks.
I don't know if that's Swahili. I'm sorry. I could have swore. I don't know.
I mean, it's right.
I have no idea what I said.
You take back those clicks. Can you imagine, like, people swearing in Swahili, and they're clicking, and they're going, like, take it back, and they're going...
You can keep up with the Rantics between shows by visiting the website at www.innersight.com/BKSG.
The opinions expressed on Feet to the Fire are those of the host, the callers, the guests, and any of the writers of chat, email, or instant messages, and are not necessarily those of any of the broadcast affiliates. Subject matters may be too intense at times for more sensitive listeners, dealing with controversial issues with blunt, brutal honesty. With that said, at no time will abusive language, pornographic descriptions, racial, ethnic, religious slurs, or simple bad manners be tolerated. Stay tuned to Feet to the Fire.
We are back. We are live. Feet to the Fire. I'm your host, James Adayanchik, the Black Knight of Talk Radio. And we are talking to Daniel Segan. Let me bring him back in. Daniel.
I
did an interview earlier today. We're going to have it rebroadcast because of the time difference with Carl Kalaman in Sweden. And his name is very straightforward. It's C-A-L-L-E. And then M-A-N. I kept calling him Kellerman every time I talked with him. And thank goodness he was gracious, and I appreciate you. I got a problem with names. I mean, I just...
Right.
But anyway, we're back. We do have a phone call. If you want to stop what we're talking about for a minute, and we'll take the phone call. And then calling live from Canada, I believe. We have Hammer. Are you there?
Yeah, James. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yeah, I'm calling from Manitoba, Canada.
Manitoba. That sounds real cool. Manitoba.
Hello to your guest, Daniel.
How are you?
Okay.
Pretty good. My question, basically the way I always understood it is we as humans, we basically resonate at a certain frequency, and maybe these other entities resonate at other certain frequencies.
Yes, at other frequencies. That's true.
Hello? Oh, sorry, I brought my phone there. And other entities, they might... resonate at other frequencies. Is it possible that the human could maybe possibly fabricate some sort of receiver to receive these transmissions and possibly, you know, manifest these other entities in front of us? And the other question is, these other entities or spirits that are in these operating in these other frequencies, are they free to change other dimensions? Are they stuck in their own dimension, or how does that work? And I'm just listening on my computer here, so I'll just I'll hang up and I'll listen off of air. And okay. James, you got a great show, and keep up the good work, and I'll wait for the answer.
All right, well, thank you very much.
Okay, let's start with frequencies. These beings definitely have existed at a different frequency. I don't like to say higher frequency because that means a level of unworthiness. Their evolutionary process is far different than ours. You cannot say they are advanced than us technologically because they haven't evolved as we did. I mean, the concept of physics we have today, to them, is obsolete anyway. Now, in terms of creating devices that would make our abilities be enhanced so we can see them or even communicate with them faster, I believe there are people working on these devices, but we come to a tricky question, contact. Contact with these beings actually brings revelations about who we are and for how long we've been here and, you know, general questions like what's the meaning of life and stuff like that. And presently we have a society that is based on blame and shame. I mean, we all point fingers at one another, blame each other. A lot, probably millions of people have died due to religious reasons. And contact with other beings that know our past, present, and future could definitely be a provocation to most religious beliefs. Not only that, but a lot of scientists are kind of stubborn in trying to say that life can only exist at a certain distance from, let's say, a star, and there has to be enough oxygen for life to exist, and that's not true. I mean, to us, oxygen is okay, but to some of these beings, oxygen on their skin is like sulfuric acid. So contact with these beings is definitely possible. Most of them are actually cautious in trying to put a contact, and not only that, but they don't want to create paranoia on us.
I do like the concept, though, that Hammer said about the idea of making a receiver of some type to tune in, like pretty much like put it on TV if it could. I mean, it sounds like a good science fiction movie. You know, I don't know. Is that actually, is it possible? I mean, you said someone's working on it. Is that like a secret project or?
Well, let me put it this way. I mean, there are some people working on alternative energy concepts based on anti-gravitational stuff. There's a guy, Stephen Greer, from the Disclosure Project. He's doing some very interesting work. I wish I could have money so I can help him launch his prototype of new energy. But if he's doing this kind of work, probably other people are trying to do experiments on telepathy and maybe try to create devices that would enhance telepathy even more at greater distances. The consortium that I mentioned that exists on Earth kind of has a strong grip on world events, let's put it this way.
Okay, you are by far not the only person that talks about this consortium or however you want to phrase it. And I think I remember you talking about these beings were warning us about them or saying that they're not as powerful in reality as they are, or they are powerful.
Well,
if you can just kind of elaborate on that.
I'll mention an incident that, because one of my questions to them, this was several months ago, was how come, let's say, we can choose remote viewing to manipulate past or future events? How come we don't have that ability? And one of these beings there that several decades ago, when contact was made, this consortium and some people from the military, they were trying to ask for information on how you manipulate parallel realities, different events. Keep in mind that time doesn't exist, so you refer to a different event,
right,
but in a parallel reality. And these beings basically refused to give information. And the main reason was, if we allow you to do experiments on parallel realities, different events, then basically you can mess with us up too anyway. So these beings, including the Zeras, they all refused to give this specific information. And at the moment, I don't know what to call this, so I'll just call it a consortium.
The Illuminati, the elite, the behind the scenes, the powers that be. I mean, I've heard all kinds of references.
Yeah, there's a group of people from, and they're not all Americans, they're all different nationalities. But what they've been trying to do, and this is something they've been trying to keep behind wraps, is try to use remote viewing for defense purposes. And they haven't been fully successful because they are not paying attention to the person that is experiencing this. I mean, if you are a remote viewer by profession and you work for Pentagon, you are going to experience some horrific events that... It's like having an out-of-body experience and suddenly you go into a chamber where somebody is tortured and it's like you feel with this absolute fear and pain. And some of these military people, I would say they are very uncompassionate. They don't understand that emotions are very powerful. Emotions, it's, you could call it love. Well, love itself is just a connection. But emotions is just a really strong energy that flows everywhere. And some of these military people are definitely uncompassionate and they have no idea how you handle certain emotional stuff. They say, well, just block it. Who cares about it? but that's not easy.
No.
I mean, if you experience a horrific experience, it's like you'll be shaked up pretty badly and you need, let's say, several hours or maybe even one day to, so to speak, detoxify, as I call it.
Yeah.
But these military people, they are very uncompassionate and very impatient. Kind of ironic. These beings that sometimes I communicate with, well, that I communicate with them, they mentioned that, as I mentioned about the contact that this consortium had and these military people try to get information on how you manipulate parallel realities, that information was not given because they know that we are going to kill each other. We're not going to use it for the good reasons. We're going to use it for the wrong reasons.
Well, and there's plenty of evidence for that.
Yes. Stephen Greer even mentioned once that the Star Wars program that U.S. is trying to build in space has been kind of messed up by some UFO activity. That has also been confirmed to me because they don't want nuclear weapons to go into space. And not only that, but pointing at any star, it's kind of a very untidy business anyway.
Yeah, I've also wondered that a nuclear explosion is so powerful, and we see it in a three-dimensional sense. But I often wondered, and I actually years ago I wrote like a little screenplay for a movie on this subject where the nuclear explosions actually go multidimensional, and then we in this movie I wrote the multidimensional beings came into our place going, hey, you know, you're messing us up and stop that.
Actually, that's an interesting observation because, as I refer in my book, Liquid Mind, consciousness I refer to as the ocean of consciousness. And what you just said about a nuclear explosion being felt in other dimensions or other realities, that could actually be very possible. It's just like... an earthquake that happens, let's say, here, and then there is a tsunami wave hitting Japan or China.
Right.
So you have a ripple effect, as I call it.
It'd be like if you were going to be a multi-dimensional traveler, if you will, you may want to chart the suns in other dimensions so that you don't go through that same field that may be very strong. I mean, I don't know if that's true or not. I mean, maybe a black hole or a, you know, supernova or something. You're probably, it's probably going to transcend our just our three dimensions.
That's actually true. It's funny, one of these beings said to me once that, you know, you people worry about if you're going to have a job, if you're going to have a retirement package or kids, whatever. And he was saying, you know, all these are so easy to fix. You know, some of us worry about whether a black hole is going to enter our galaxy and basically we have to move to another planet. And he said, I think those kind of fears are very different. And then I say, yeah, human fears are very odd because they are very localized. Every person has its own type of fear. It's not like we all live in a common group fear. I mean, group fears are basically religions the word religion in Latin means one of its meanings is fear of the unknown. So it's kind of ironic we belong to group fears.
Mm.
But one of the things that these beings did in the past is they tried to build temples according to the location of certain constellations or stars. And then when I heard that, I said, well, why? And they say, well, that's the only constant there is for you to relate to us. And then these beings say, we can tell you from what planet we come from by the name we give you. You don't even understand it because it doesn't exist in your vocabulary. So the best thing to do is to create temples that symbolize certain constellations and certain celestial patterns. And that's one of the great part of the, I would guess, the doings on Earth in regard to building certain complexes such as the Giza.
Oh, really?
Pyramid. That huge temple in Cambodia, I forgot its name of it, which is pointing to the Drac constellation. I mean, the Great Pyramid of Giza, it was pointing towards Leo constellation when it was built. Nobody knows exactly when it was built, but because it was such a long time ago.
No, they don't know when it was built? It was even
longer? No. I mean humans.
Okay,
humans
okay.
Don't know. But one of the things I asked and was, how come we have 12 months? If time doesn't exist, why Earth itself has 12 months? Why not have 6 or why not have 13 or something like that a year? Then it's being said, you have 12 because of the number of kinds that arrived initially.
No, that 12 and 7 and all these numbers have gone throughout history for a reason. And we all apparently only remember that these numbers are special, but no one really knows, I guess, why. I mean, we have
exactly
our theories. But
why? And then this being said that, you know, initially when these beings came to Earth, it wasn't just one kind. There were 12 kinds initially. And then I said, so what does this mean? Were you trying to occupy this planet? He said, no. Most of us migrate from planet to planet. And it was kind of interesting because the way we understand colonization basically means extinction. these beings, so to speak, didn't colonize. They basically occupied because there was, they mentioned there was a nasty incident that happened nearby our solar system, and they were forced to come here for a period of time. And while they were here, they basically built temples, they built cities, they tried to teach humans how to do certain things and stuff like that, and then they left because there was no reason to be here. And then humans tried to humanize them and create all these various religions in their name and hoping they'll come back. And that's the thing, they don't like to be babysitters. And that's the problem with humans. We want someone to come to our planet to fix all our problems. But the question is, are we willing to take personal responsibility for what we do? Are we willing to be tolerant of one another? Are we willing to, so to speak, be open-minded and be socially progressed people? I'm not sure how many people I think about this kind of thing. So, but one of the major things with these beings is that they don't like to be babysitters, and some of them mentioned that they came several times to Earth, tried to calm things down by bringing back astronomy and some type of law and order thing, and then everything went back to normal, and then when they left, then people started killing each other, doing human sacrifices for the gods to come back. So it's, when you look on a larger scale, this history that we think is real is a joke.
It
looks like a theatrical thing.
I completely understand. I understand that point. What I'm wondering about again is the spiritual aspect. My personal theory, which has no proof, can't prove it. It's a working model. And as I hear things, including your stories, I kind of adjust and move around. But I got a feeling that the human race, and I'm not taking this as some kind of pride because I was just born here. I have no control on what we are. I mean, I can control my destiny to some degree, but something about the human spirit or soul or however you want to phrase it is either unique or rare or whatever or powerful. It could do a lot of good. It could do a lot of damage. And because I don't understand why, if we were risky, why don't they just wipe us out or something? I mean, if we're that insignificant, there seems to be something here that is both compelling to be studied or perhaps even taken. In when you talk about people who are doing DNA abductions or whatever, or a fascination of some type. I mean, you have beings that live for millions and millions and millions of years, life can get a little boring, so to speak.
Well, if you're not active, it gets boring. But let me put it this way. Actually, you do actually have a point there. What's special about humans? A lot of things. Let's put it this way. Some of these beings asked me, what do you mean by God? And I said, I have no idea what you're talking about. Because I was asking the question, and then this being was asking me the questions, and I was thinking, what's going on here? Who is answering them? And they are kind of fascinated about the way we think. The emotions we have, they don't know where it comes from. But let's look at certain behaviors we have, like eating, drinking, having sex, let's say walking, doing physical activities, whatever. To us, it's normal, and we take it for granted. To them, it's so odd. You know, it's like we try to do a New York Marathon, and some people are so big thrilled that they participate in that event. To them, it's like, well, we don't know what's the big deal. We can fly from one place to another. We don't need any wings. We don't need any equipment. So why do these creatures down there get so excited about running or having a thrill thing? And you could say that we've been kind of a lab thing, but not in a bad sense. They're merely looking at us to see how we behave. Some of them try to figure out whether there is a gene that connects emotions to a physical reality. But one of the things that I observe about these beings is I think that many of them that come to us actually belong to the same group.
Okay, let's hold it right there because we're going to go for a break, and I want to come back to talking on this subject. I got a feeling that you're describing what in the Star Trek The New Generation put down as the Q. I wonder if there's a relationship with Terry. We'll come back, and we're talking with Daniel Segan. AstroTravel.com is his site. We'll be right back in a moment. You're listening to Feet to Fire on the IBC Radio Network. This reality, it is going to go on without me. I don't know. I'm so happy and I'm not happy. But here we are with Daniel Segan. We're talking about his conversations with multidimensional beings. And we do have a couple of questions that come in during the break, if I can throw them out quickly.
Yes, sir, James.
Have they mentioned, we're getting specific questions now, so I'll put that up there. Have they mentioned to you in your talk of what we are calling Planet X and perhaps any type of collisions in the near future with comets and or planets or dead stars or stuff like that? Did they ever get into that?
Okay, Planet X, Nibiru.
Yeah, there's many, yeah, right.
Okay. Well, let's put it this way. How about if that Planet X is not actually a planet, but let's say a space station that basically floats in space?
Well, people have said that. That has been put forth.
And the chances of that coming back are actually very high. One of them mentioned to me that during this war in Iraq, there is so much suppression of information by the government. And that's because there is a lot of activity that the government doesn't want to release, like maybe UFO sightings and stuff like that. The numbers are increasing, but they usually increase during wars. That is, I don't know, maybe to let people know, not to blow themselves up and say, you know, take it easy and don't kill each other that quickly, you know. But Planet X, actually... from what I get, there are different kinds that come to Earth. There are at least 20 kinds visiting this world, so to speak, on a yearly basis. Each kind has its own will, agenda, whatever you want to call it. But there seems to be a common agreement among all of them not to go in huge numbers and start killing people, you know, the way we would think about colonizing. We humans, when we think about colonizing, it's something like dictatorship, and that's it, you know. It means lots of tragedies. But to these beings, they don't... some of them, I mean, from what they mentioned, in the past, they were forced to come to us because there was an emergency. Then they had to leave because they saw no reason to be here. But every time they left, humans were going back into the Dark Ages. I mean, the Mayas are very famous with human sacrifices and so many different events, especially called the first, second, and third, and fourth suns, as they call it in Maya calendar. And during those, during the peak of those periods, they had to come back because, I mean, they were nearby observing and they were wondering, what are we doing? Now, each kind is coming to us at their own will, but there seems to be a common agreement of not, so to speak, come in a threatening, the way we would perceive as threatening. The way they perceive as threatening is something else. You also have to keep in mind that these beings that come to Earth, it's not that they have nothing else to do with their lives. And, I mean, they're basically, you could say, astronauts. And actually, each kind has its own collective. We don't have one because we're afraid of acknowledging who we are and what's our purpose in life. But each one of them actually has a collective, and I think that actually helps in becoming star travelers. I mean, if we want to go to space nowadays, we have around 200-something countries, and each country doesn't agree on who to send to space and stuff like that. If you have a collective, there's no big deal. It's like you go because you have to, in pursuit of knowledge, in pursuit of evolution, in pursuit of what I refer to as evolution of awareness. Mm. Awareness, I think, is more important than technological progress, but anyway.
I asked you a question in email before I lost all my data. Oh, God, that was terrible. I appreciate you getting back to me. I lost all the call, all the guest name, all their information is terrible. But I had asked, and I meant this in respect, if by chance you had encounters prior to the show, if you would ask them if they have anything to say to me or what have you, or if I could correspond or whatever. I don't know. Did that happen to happen?
Well, I did. I got your email with that question. They keep on repeating to me the same thing. Don't be afraid. Be responsible, and live your life. And don't let others, so to speak, suppress you. I know people like to hear prophecies that everything is going to be fine tomorrow and that's it. But people don't seem to understand what it takes to be at that, so to speak, happiness state.
You know, that's very great that you put that out there, because people are looking for a magic wand, whether it be Christianity, Hindu, any of these religions or spiritualities, even in the New Age movement. They think a magic wand's going to come over the earth and we're just all going to be happy. But I tend to think that we're going to have to really do it. It's like someone wishing they'd have a weightlifter's body without weightlifting. It's not going to happen. We have to do the work to get there.
Exactly. We have to, well, like they say, you know, even if we come and fix your world, which they can do anytime they want, the question is, can you hold on to the vision of living in bliss? And they say, we've done it before, and before it failed, it failed, it failed. So now it's time for you people, since humans have globalized this planet, now we no longer live in very isolated tribes, even if our political system is part of a tribal mentality. But now it's time for us to basically think big and think how we can live together. I mean, just because somebody can fix our problems, if we cannot hold on to that vision, to that lifestyle, to that way of being, then basically we're going to lose everything.
And that's so true. Look at people who have declared bankruptcy and went into their second bankruptcy just from... And I'm not talking about catastrophe happening, but just from misappropriations. Until you learn that lesson that you're in, and the theory I go under is that we're in a problem because of a problem, and we have to solve the problem to get out of the problem. I mean, it's not rocket science.
Well, that's true. Actually, you don't have to be Einstein to figure this out. But the problem with people is they don't know what power is, and religions kind of suppress us. Western religions basically say you'll find the answer when you die, which, you know, doesn't help the present. Eastern religions, they say you'll find the answer, but you have to get reincarnated to come back here. So basically that doesn't help either. So the meaning of power is something is like a taboo to a lot of people. We are being taught since childhood that power is very dangerous and stuff like that. Well, power is responsibility. Power is not you controlling things. It's about you recreating your own world. Creation never ended. I mean, like Western religions tend to say, creation is still going on. New species evolve of animals, plants, whatever, you know. Actually, most of us even don't know how many of them are on this planet.
We have a question coming in that I'm glad they mentioned it. What about you mentioned the Mayans before. What about the Mayan calendar and the 2012 date? Is there something tied into that? Do we have had...
Basics calendar. Yes, actually that's kind of interesting, because when I was in school I was doing hexadecimals when I was doing computer science. That calendar, from what they've been telling me, that calendar is actually very similar to the Buddhist calendar, and very similar to the ancient Egyptian calendar. And what I mean by ancient Egyptian, I don't mean the one that some people claim it is, because there is a history in Egypt which I refer to as pre-ancient Egyptian, the history that hardly anybody talks about because they say it's impossible. I mean, present Egyptologists say that, you know, Egypt started
right.
About 5,000 BC. Well,
right.
That's, if we go back... way back, there's a whole different evidence there that something did exist there. And there is a common thing with these calendars about base six, as I call it, or hexadecimals. I have no idea what it means, but it gives me the impression that it's part of the same, international type group that occupied this planet at that time. Let me give you an example of what I'm referring about this international group.
Okay, we've got about two minutes to a break, so just want to let you know.
Okay, let's imagine that we just discovered Antarctica and there are 20 countries trying to go there. So each one sends two people on this special team to go to Antarctica and assess whether life can be cultivated and whether people can live there. So basically... the group of people you are sending there basically doesn't represent one country, but it represents many countries. And what happened on Earth a long time ago, it was all these groups of different kinds working together with a common purpose. So it's kind of like saying UN is sending troops somewhere, but it's not troops. It's basically scientists and people that investigate plants and, I don't know, spirituality, things like that. So basic calendar is actually something that we're using in very, very ancient times. And for whatever reason, we use Gregorian calendar today, which is according to the Pope that decided to change the calendar.
But there's no inherently prophetic in that calendar? 2012 will come and go?
All right. One of them actually said to me that the chances of them returning on that day, on that particular spot, are very remote. And the reason why is because when they did come in the past, back then the primitive man still lived the way he wanted in the, well, I mean, in not caves, but buildings. He didn't even invent the wheel, or even if he had the wheel in certain parts of the globe, he didn't struggle to make technology. Technology was created because of wars. That's how basically it started, you know. You want to kill more people? Well, let's bring people together to invent new killing machines. So in the past, when the aliens were coming back, as the Maya call it, the first, second, third, fourth, and what's now called the fifth sun, basically back then nothing much changed. So there was... So when they came, basically they still dealt with the same civilization, the Mayas, but different time, whether 2,500 years passed by or 3,600, didn't really matter because not much changed. But since their last, so to speak, big comeback, a lot of things have changed on Earth. The Mayas no longer exist. Neither do the Aztecs, Egyptians, nobody exists. Now it's a whole different world. So if they come back to Earth, the question is, with who they are going to make contact, and are they going to come, so to speak, on that particular day, on that particular spot, or are they going to change the timetable?
You know, that's a very startling kind of a revelation there, looking at it from that perspective, that at that time period, when these connections came, they were going to come back, but now those societies aren't there. So perhaps, if I can use a term, the bets are off. I mean, that prophecy is no longer needed because they're not there. And a new agreement has been made as time went on, or they're going to come back in their own time period and kind of assess, like, wow, these things are different now. Well, let's reassess how we're going to connect, if we're going to connect.
Exactly. Now, as I said, the Mayas no longer exist. Thanks to the Spanish, you know, most of them are killed, and very little text that survives today, especially with the alphabet. I mean, most of the Maya text hasn't been even translated.
You're listening to
The Black Knight.
On the IBC Radio Network. All right, we're back live with Daniel Siegel. I want to give you, we've got about 4 minutes. I want to give you the rest of the time, whatever you want to finish up or talk about. So go ahead.
Okay, let's start with prophecies. Prophecies themselves expire when the narrow bandwidth of consciousness expands. So the prophecies of the ancients are no longer compatible with present reality because conditions have changed. We think very differently today than 10,000 years ago. So if 2012 is going to be an important day, year, most likely it's not going to happen the way people think in terms of the way the Mayas talked about it, or the Egyptians or the Buddhists or whatever. It's not going to happen in the way they think because conditions have changed, but it's going to be something else. And the best thing people can do is not to fear change. People have a lot of hard time adapting to change, and that's the problem. Realizing that you're not the only being in this universe, actually, a lot of people should feel happy about it, and they should not feel threatened by what revelations they might have about you. So that's all I wanted to say about prophecy. If something is going to happen, it's going to be something very different than most people haven't even thought about it. And I'll give an example. When year 2000 came and a lot of people were predicting the end of the world and stuff like that, I personally didn't care about it because I knew that that is no longer valid in the times I live. And actually, I was right. I didn't stock up in water, in food. I didn't waste my money in huge quantities. And everything went fine. And the same thing is going to happen in 2012. People have to think differently. It's not like UFOs are going to come on New Mexico City and everybody is going to be, singing the Beatles music, Imagine.
Yeah.
It's not going to be like that. It's going to be something else. Maybe signs on the air, maybe unusual phenomena. Large spaceships, maybe flying here and there, and try to raise the attention of the media, which presently it's suffering from attention deficit disorder.
Yeah.
I
tend to think is that you bring very important information to my little pool of knowledge here, and I want to say that I have not heard anybody who had it all right, and it isn't. That's not a reflection on you. It's just that I think that all these beings, the prophecies, and all that add nuggets of truth into the pot, and I think the biggest variable, more powerful than any of the prophecies or looks, is that our free will to do what we're going to do. And we overlook that. We're always looking for something else to bail us out, to pay yes. for the debt, and yet we have to do it. And the people who have lost a lot of weight or have come back from catastrophe, losing limbs, and building a solid financial future, all will tell you it takes work and discipline to do it.
Exactly, yes. In the end, it's actually up to us. They will only interfere only if things get really, really critical. But, I don't want to think about those moments because that means it's, World War VI or something like that.
Yeah, and I would imagine, whether it be angels or aliens, interdimensional beings, that if some oppressive force, whether it be on Earth or outside the Earth, would interfere, we might count on a balance, we'll say, a balanced intervention. But if it comes from simply within, I think it's pretty much up to us.
Exactly, yes. And the main thing is that we're not alone. And we've never been alone.
Well, that's good. Our history of powerful beings on Earth has been one of oppression. So I guess that's why we have that natural fear. But we've come to that time of the show, and I appreciate you being on. I'm going to ask you if we can come back again sometime and continue. It's a fascinating conversation.
Thank you, James, and thank you for everyone listening.
Okay, you can go to Daniel's website, astraltravel.com. His book is on our website. Here we go. Feet to the Fire. We'll be back next week. Talk more about the Mayans. We'll be back. We'll see you later. Bye.
Retell your timeless truths. Oh, ancient one.